And God just sends pretty people into here, so I get to look at you. Woo, I like it. And this gentleman got sent in here, and his wife would never come with him, except that she got jealous because I had a crush on him. Now she comes too. Oh, but this gentleman if you're new here tonight and you don't know him, he's been working to help the Navy men know what they need to know about something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what he teaches. But he's been doing that for quite some time. And he's also got his wife well-trained so that in case he can't be there, she goes. Don't you? No. Anyhow, this is probably one of the nicest couples you're ever going to meet on this earth, Kim and Craig. And Craig's going to share his thoughts with us tonight. It's our Craig.
Good evening. My name's, for those of you who don't know me, my name's Craig Hendricks, and I've been coming here since about 2006. And really, I think the thing that's most significantly brought me into this church, believe it or not, was because I was retired Army. And the experiences I had in the Army really got me wondering about intuition, because things would happen, or they wouldn't happen, to my benefit, through the course of my career. And my daughter had mentioned to me, believe it or not, a letter when I was in Iraq, that she knew of this little church that I might be interested in, because these people sort of kind of thought the way I did. I'm not too sure my daughter really thought the way I did. But that got my curiosity up. How did I? And so I showed up. But it was about trying to figure out about my own intuition. That's why I came here. I thought these people might have a little bit of a handle on whatever that concept is, whatever intuition is. And when I would talk to people in the military, I got every imaginable kind of definition for it. I'm sure all of which were wrong, to be honest with you. But in coming here, my curiosity was piqued so profoundly, I just had to keep coming back. And in the course of attending Millie's classes on Thursday evenings and Tuesday, where I originally started, just amazingly powerful healings took place within me that almost became more important than finding out about intuition. However, I'm an analyst, I'm a scientist. That never really went away. So my curiosity has driven me to try to understand what that extra sense is. Some people call it the sixth sense. Well, I recently met somebody who identified it as, it's not the sixth sense, it's not something extra that comes into our lives on the odd occasion. It's the first sense. It's this thing that precedes absolutely everything we do to our profound benefit. Okay. Now, I'm going to digress a little bit. For those of you who don't know me, my good friends certainly know, I'm colorblind. And that has conditioned a lot of what has happened in my life, interestingly enough. But it's serious enough to where if I see a stoplight at an intersection, what you think is red is some kind of dark weirdishness to me. I'm not really too sure what it is. And there's a light right below it, but I know it's a red light, and I'm supposed to stop on that top light. The light right below it is a little bit lighter of that weirdish color. Still don't know what it is, but I know it's a little lighter, and if they're together, and they're both shining together, not very often, or I can see them on that lamp holder, I know that that's the yellow light, quote unquote. And the bottom one, well, that's just a white light. No different than the street lights. No different at all. Now, So you can see that I might be posed with some problems on the odd occasion. So, and I got to take you back in a little bit of history here. And this is 1970. The draft is going on, and I've gotten my draft notice, and I chose to enlist in the Marine Corps. And we all have to process through. This is a little bit of history for those who don't know anything about the draft or what happened during Vietnam. So literally you reported with hundreds of other young men and a number of women also, though not have drafted, they also joined at a processing center that then gave them all the appropriate physicals and testings to make sure they could actually join the military appropriately. Well, so there I am in the center with hundreds of other young men on this one side of the building. And it's in a building in Los Angeles. San Diego at the time really was not that big, you know. And it's still pretty small in comparison to L.A. But the building up in Los Angeles where we all had to do our physical was on a city block, a true city block in Los Angeles. Well, if you know anything about L.A., you know up there they really have city blocks. They're like a quarter of a mile long. And this building that they were processing us in on, and I have no idea what the full scope of the building was, but it was one single building on one square block. It was huge, like a quarter of a mile on each side. It was just an amazing building. So you go in the front door, and you start taking all these tests, and then they send you back for your physical, and all of a sudden you're, next thing you know, whether you like it or not, you're standing in line in your white boxer shorts and white T-shirt with 400 other young men and going through station after station after station where one they test for diabetes, another one they test for any sort of blood problems, yada, 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 yada. Well, at some point or another, I get to the color blindness test. Now, I really want to pass this thing. Unfortunately, the only thing I can see is the example card. But that doesn't give me, that doesn't mean I'm not going to try to pass it. So as I'm staring, the line keeps moving that way. A lot of other frustrated young men are behind me because I'm not moving because I'm going to see what these patterns are. And ultimately I just fail. I fail miserably. And so I turned around to this guy and I said, and the line was gone down this long hallway. Nobody there. I said, well, what's the next station? And this young man looks at me and he says, well, follow the green line. What? What? And there's a green line on the floor. Actually, there's a number of lines on the floor. One of the lines that I think is green, or at least seems most green to me, I go, okay, I don't want to make this guy angry at me. I'm 18 years old, you know, you're just trying to accommodate everybody. So I look down at the floor, and then I start following this line, which was actually, as I recall, there were four lines, and it was the second line from the left I thought was the green one. So I started walking down the hall. And in no time at all, there weren't a lot of people around me. And I went through some little intersection, and I looked up, and I looked back down again, and there wasn't four lines anymore. There were six lines.
Wow.
All going from different directions. But now they were all parallel going down this path. And I wasn't too sure which one went where with respect to the green. And I thought it was the second one from the left. But it couldn't be the second one from the left if there are now six. So this is the logic I'm trying to go through, which is much like the logic I use when I go through street signs. So I'm obviously lost in the middle of this building. But I'm going to give it the good old Hendrix try. I'm tenacious, if nothing else. So I keep going down this road. Well, the farther I go, the fewer the people I see. And for whatever reason, it starts getting darker. I'm going, well, okay, I'll continue. I'll get back to somewhere. These lines must take you somewhere. Right? So I then go through some double doors, and there's absolutely nobody there, nobody around me. Do I go back? Well, I'm not too sure. I can find my way back because I'm not too sure what line is what now. And it's dark enough to where really I can't see any of the colors, but I do see that there are lines down there. So I see a bunch of lines going off into this one door. And I go through that door, and this is a very dark room in there, with the one exception, and at the far end of this large, large room, which seemed to have a lot of equipment around it, there was a little desk with a man who, from behind, sort of looked like Einstein in coveralls. But it was pretty dark in there. And so I thought, well, the lines, a bunch of lines are leading toward him, so I'm going to go ahead and go that direction. I'm going to go to him. Maybe he'll tell me how to get back there. Because I'm obviously lost at this point, though I'd walked for quite a while. And as I'm walking, you know, you're barefoot at the same time. And not really thinking about that, I didn't announce myself. But obviously I was getting closer to this gentleman with each step, rather silently. And at some point or another, something happened to where he sort of thought, uh-oh, somebody's behind me. So he turns around with sort of this mixed, weird expression of incredulity and terror. Because there's some shape out there, obviously a pair of white boxer shorts and white T-shirt, that he can clearly see, and maybe some lesser appendages sticking out from those. And he just bursts out, "What are you doing?" As if I'm not doing something right. You know? And I said, "I'm following the green line." And he goes, that made no sense to him, I'm sure. And then he asked me really the same question again. He goes, "Well, how'd you get here? I followed the green line. I thought this was simple." You know? And so he was going, I said, I was processing in somewhere in this building, and now I'm down here. I was following the green line. So he's going, "How'd you get here?" I answered that question already. He said, "Well, you can't get there from here." "What?" "I just did. I can get there from here." He goes, "No, I don't think so." He goes, "I don't know how to do it." So, obviously no one told him about the green line. However, I said, "Well, how do I get back? How do I get back?" And he says, and he pauses for a moment, and now it's dawning on him, I really am just this young man who is sort of lost in this huge labyrinth of a building. And he says, "I've got an idea." "Okay." He goes, "I want you to come over here and stand on this thing." So I walk over, and there's this big metal plate, and there's some steel bars coming over it, stuff like that. He says, "Just stand on that." He said, "It's an elevator." He says, I'll put you upstairs, and then you can go around to the front of the building." Well, that seems sort of kind of reasonable to me. So as I'm standing there, he turns this thing on, and the elevator starts going up. And then these steel plates then open up, and sunlight pours in. Sunlight pours in. I don't know if you've seen these old movies where they had elevators that went through the sidewalk. So there I am, being elevated up out of these Stygian depths. And in my white boxer shorts and white T-shirt and barefoot onto some street in Los Angeles that was adjacent to this building. And I'm going, "Oh, this is great. There are no controls on this elevator to go back down. None." So I turned around. I go, okay. I just have to walk around this building. Now, this building is a quarter mile on each side. That means I've got to walk a half a mile to the opposite side of this building to get back to the door. Okay. So I go, this is downtown L.A. And this is not in the nicest part of town. I'm going, great. Okay. Then all of a sudden I turn, and there is this LAPD car goes cruising slowly by. I'm going, great. I'm in my boxer shorts and white t-shirt and barefoot. They're going to think I'm a pervert. They don't stop. This apparently looks normal. So I continue my walk around. I eventually get to the front of the building. And there's a long line. There's still a line of young men that are processing in. All in a variety of, you know, attire, with the exception of me and my boxer shorts and white t-shirt. And I figure I've got head of the line privileges, so I go straight to the door. And as I walk into the door, some crusty old sergeant is standing there, who then proceeds, fully realizing that somehow I've gotten outside the building. This shouldn't be possible, I'm sure he's thinking. And he yells at me, "What the hell are you doing out here for?" I said, "I followed the green line." So he made some mention about my diminished capacity in rather colorful terms that only a sergeant can come up with. And then I shuffled. And then that unfortunately led to the rest of my military career. Now, I ended up telling my wife this story. She somehow, the subject came up, and I relayed this story to her the other day. But because of these concepts that a gentleman by the name of James Carpenter, who's a researcher, a psychologist, and researcher in psychology, psychiatry, and parapsychology, the concepts that he brought out seemed to, all of a sudden, I had a new understanding of. And one of his concepts was that, and I'm sure, well, he doesn't say this in his textbook, which I highly recommend, First Sight. He doesn't say, okay, but I believe that the first cause is everything. God is everything. God created us all. And ultimately, science is the discovery of what God's works have been about. That's really what it is. Science is the discovery of God's works. That includes trying to figure out who and what we are. Who and what are we? Who are we? Not only that, but how do we function? There are aspects to it that imply that we have far greater control in our lives than we could ever imagine. And indeed, I think that whole set of events of me getting lost in the building, albeit colorblind, and then finding my way to the opposite side of the building, always trying to follow the green line, was really a metaphor for the rest of my life, as it turned out. I didn't find freedom, I didn't find peace, I didn't find happiness until I ran into God, the guy who looked like Einstein in coveralls, who then lifted me out of the darkness into an area where there was no more green line. So now I had to depend upon my inner self to A, get around a few blocks of LA. But that's really what we're all called to do. Okay? Now, the guy who discovered all of these theories put it together over 30 years of research. He is a clinical psychologist, he's a parapsychologist, he's been in private practice for over 30 years. He is currently a clinical associate professor at the Department of Psychiatry at the University of North Carolina, and he is a research associate at the Ryan Research Center. And after studying all of the varieties of extrasensory perception, or as I like to see it, manifestations of God in everybody's lives, in all of the extreme cases he's been part of, and witnessed, He came up with a few interesting concepts, a couple of interesting concepts, premises about first sight. And the first one is, and I'm just going to quote him, but then we'll talk about it afterwards, that organisms are psychologically unbounded. What on earth does that mean? Psychologically, in fact, and this really is in accordance with what, if you believe that God has created you with infinite capacity, then this makes perfect sense. Psychologically unbounded, there are no limitations. There are no limitations, and the extended universe of meaning has an indefinite extent throughout all of space and time. Now, when we're talking about people who have exceptional skills in this ability, whether mediumship, believe it or not, is an exceptional skill and ability where spirit speaks to them throughout, from beyond space and time, literally from beyond space and time, to get a message across to their loved one. It is very little different from that individual who then sets himself in a position and he's able to perceive or describe something that's going to, that physically exists someplace else. And that could be thousands of miles away. And there was some other research that suggests this is absolutely the case. And it's called pre-stimulus response, where another gentleman by the name of Daryl Bim, who Jim Carpenter actually refers to, identified that human beings have the ability to receive emotionally evoking information, stimulus, from an emotionally evoking event right now, from an event that happens in the future to them. But it has to be emotionally evoking. Emotion's a key in it. In short, if I'm standing here and I go walking 6 seconds that direction, something happens to me over there, right here, my heart rate is already changing. We've proven this in a laboratory. 6 seconds from now, my heart rate is changing, my skin galvanic response is changing, ocular dilation. The human body is preparing for this emotionally evocative event. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. We perceive outside of time and space itself. Also, he suggests that all experience and behavior are constituted out of unconscious psychological processes. Boy, and that's intuition, an unconscious psychological process. What is going on with intuition? More often than not, people really don't have a clue what intuition is. And it's because the impetus to do this or that to keep you out of harm's way occurs to them in a subconscious process that means they don't know where the information came from. It gets much more complicated than this, though. He has found out that the human mind, I'm not talking about the brain, the mind actually scans outside of time and space, as bizarre as this may seem, and sees potential events coming. Okay? And it then proceeds to weight those potential events. Is this a threat? Because what's the number one intention in your consciousness, in yourself? Yourself, your well-being. So, its number one goal is, am I going, is this a threat? Is this a threat? Is this a threat? Is this a threat? It will weigh all of those, and then it will make a decision for a course of action that is largely unconsciously derived. So then you end up saying, when you're on an intersection, and instead of stepping across into the street and getting run over by the truck, all of a sudden you go, wait a minute here. Something catches your eye. Well, really is your subconscious going, hey, there's a really cool window display over here. This is much more interesting. And you go, hey, I think I'll go look at that. And as you step over to look at that, the truck goes flying by. That would have hit you if you would have taken this other course. If your subconscious had not driven you, and it's not a mechanical process, there's choice going on here all the time. But if your subconscious had not helped you define what the safest course of action should be. Now, there's a variety of sensations, pardon me, there's a variety of sources of information for that the mind gets the information from. There's non-local information, which is literally information that comes from someplace else, outside of space and time. There's sensation information that it is processing all the time. And that's how your subconscious actually communicates with you. A good example about that. I took a trip to Canada. And when I was up in Canada, on a very hot night, I was rolling down the road, and I got a sudden chill. It was in the 90s. I shouldn't have gotten a chill, but I got this chill, and I had to roll up my window. As I went across the steel bridge, a lumber truck came around the other way and then smashed my driver's side mirror, which shattered against the window I had just closed. My intuition, that perceptive ability inherent within each and every one of us, use physical sensation to cause me to change the paradigm so that instead of getting in a fatal accident, which probably would have been the case, it was just a momentary startle. Memory. It uses memory sometimes. A lot of times when I'm giving a message, there are times when I will have a memory that is directly applicable to the person involved. One time, I gave a message to this woman who was leading a business entourage to LA to a conference. The message that came up in my mind, that just popped in there, was about an event that happened to me down on the border, where a woman was leading an entourage from Guadalajara to Los Angeles to a Marian conference. And I was relaying this information, trying to figure it all out, but I said, you are that woman. And that made perfect sense to her. It completely validated exactly what she needed to hear so that the other advice was made sense to her. But that's how a medium works, is getting information. They can get it through their memory. Sometimes they get it through their imagination. It's just what comes into the top of your head. It seems like a creative moment. But it is directly applicable to the person who's receiving the information, to where they sit there and say, oh, wait a minute, I got that. That makes sense. That is absolutely for me. Now, basically, what is this all driven by? It's driven by intention. Absolute intention. Perfect intention on the part of you. The first intention is, how do I maintain my own personal welfare? That is subconsciously wired into us. But the other intention could very well be, well, wait a minute, I want to do something. I want to achieve something. And those energies, those abilities to scan and see opportunities and direct you to that moment, the same thing is happening here, to direct you to this piece right here that is the path you want to go, is how it is going to function for you. So what's happening? You're in control of this whole process. Absolute perfect control of it. And what drives those controls? Really your values. Your standards of behavior. If you have noble values, you're going to be driven in a noble way towards those types of avenues, towards those types of activities, towards those types of things that you would really be proud of being a part of. And so, I'm going to have to, the time has run out. And my next talk is going to be how to engage and strengthen your intention so you can be in complete control of your intuition.
Wow.
So, and that'll be in a few weeks. One plug. This is the book, First Sight. It really is a textbook, but this is a summarization of 30 years of research. I highly, highly recommend it. And if you're bold enough, you can even email this guy and talk to him like I did. And he's more than willing to answer questions and interact with you. Yes, Bill.
What was the author's name?
James C. Carpenter. It'll be up here for anybody who wants to talk. Copy it. Thank you.
Golly, does that give us a lot to think about? I think we should all take that home and really think about it. You know, in my childlike manner, in which I'm very childlike, we're just really fingertips of God. We think, oh boy, did I do that good, where we're just really, we just maneuver without even realizing we're being maneuvered by a tremendous intelligence that knows far more than we individuals know. We're just little tiny fingertips. But see, that's my childlike way of looking at it. That's tremendous, Craig. Thank you for sharing all of that. Wow, Patty Walsh, I'm glad you got here in time to hear that.
I am mighty glad.
Mighty glad. Wow, you know, I really appreciate it when people like Craig, with his years of experience in intelligence and education and all that he has, when he steps up to work for God like he has, he really does make himself a tremendous blessing to all of us. Have you really thought about some of the things he said? Have you? Robin, I know you were. I could see your little mind back there going on and... You know, it's just the uniqueness of us sitting here, both of you wiggling your thumbs and didn't even know you were doing it. We do it, again, I think a lot of us, we react, not even knowing why. It just hits us, doesn't it, Craig? Just hits us from somewhere. Oh, okay, Millie. Shut up, Millie.